Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Space Floor NBA Podcast. My name is Connor Gielan.
And I'm Connor Flannery.
This is our 33rd official episode. This is kind of round two of the NBA playoffs, part two edition, because we're recording a week later now on May 5th. Mm-hmm. And let's start off talking about, first, before we get into the playoffs, just a little news around the league, talking about there have been two coaching changes before we get into the playoffs.
Obviously for the non-playoff teams.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But first is Monty Williams, assistant coach of the 76ers. Now he just inked a five-year contract with the Phoenix Suns. And then second, we'll talk about Tyronn Lue. It looks like he's set to be the new Lakers head coach. First, talking about Monty Williams and the Suns, I was thrown off about this because I know Monty Williams is a good coach. I think he was very successful in the G League and as an assistant. Five-year contract, though, that's pretty kind of out there. And personally, if I'm the Suns, I would not want to give Monty Williams a five-year contract. For Monty Williams, huge win. He's been the coach of successful assistant to a successful team. But this contract, like, he's going to be a prominent head coach in the league, talking about taking over one of, like, the most promising young teams, I guess, talent-wise. That's a big job. And if I'm the Suns, I kind of want to make sure I get my guy before I give him 5 years with Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton. Because if they don't clash, like, I know you were saying, like what's the harm, right?
I mean, no, I just think I kind of don't get why he has never had a head coaching job before in the NBA. He has in the G League, but he's never had a head coaching job in the NBA, as far as I know. So if he's not proven, or if he's proven only in the assistant coaching job, then maybe you offer him a 1 or 2 year deal to figure something out and just see if it works, see if your guys like him. But if he's not really proven like that, it's a little bit strange if you'd offer me a five-year contract.
Well, we've seen a lot of people come from assistant coaching jobs to
for
head
sure.
coaching
I mean,
jobs.
Pretty much every head coach ever has like been an assistant coach and worked their way out through the ranks.
But I'm saying even like signed away from other teams.
Yeah, and even signing away from other teams. Yeah, that there's nothing wrong with going out and signing the 76ers head coach, because I'm sure that Monty Williams. Yeah, that's what I mean, is signing him to be your head coach from the assistant coaching position on the 76ers. But the thing is, if he's never had that head coaching job, I don't understand why you sign him to a five-year contract as a head coach.
On the Suns, I'm not signing anyone to a five-year
contract. Yeah, that's that too, but especially a guy who's never been a head coach of an NBA franchise.
Just because, like, it's tough to have a head coach for, like, a really, really, really bad team. You see Igor Kokoshkov or something, like, that was their coach this year. Just, he never got a chance. Like, hopefully he'll get another job in the NBA. But he never had a chance. Just, the season was bad, and it was maybe his fault, maybe it wasn't, but just with young teams, sometimes you blame the coach. And for the next 5 years, they can't really blame the head coach, because if they do want to fire Monty Williams, that really, like, I don't know the exact numbers behind it, but I know that that takes away from the excess money that you can spend on things like coaching and staff.
Yeah, and you only have so much money you can spend on that, on those fields. But I kind of don't get why you give Igor Koskov, you give him like 1 year of being in the lottery in a team that's not really ready to compete just because Devin Booker says we're not a lottery team anymore, we're ready to make the playoffs. Like, they were not ready to compete in the playoffs. They're not ready to make it out of the lottery yet. Of course they're going to have an off season, and it's a little bit strange going back to the 5 year thing. Like, why do you give him a year and you're giving Monty Williams 5 years? I mean, maybe you just have more confidence in Monty Williams. Maybe there's something that we don't know about Monty Williams. Like, who knows? But a little bit strange to me.
Yeah. Okay. Going on to Tyronn Lue with the Lakers. Okay. First of all, we have to address the elephant in the room. LeBron runs every team that he goes to. It's so funny. Like, come on, he hired Tyronn Lue as the head coach of the Lakers.
Basically.
Can we all agree on that?
Yeah, and I don't even think it's so much because he thinks that Tyronn Lue is a fantastic coach as much as he's had Tyronn Lue before. Tyronn Lue knows exactly how it's going to work. And, like,
and LeBron just wants him. That's so funny. He's really le GM.
Yeah.
It's not a joke. It's, okay. But, like, aside from all of that, like, talking about Tyronn Lue as a head coach, I personally very much like this head coaching, like, hire.
Uh-huh.
Because even though, like, fundamentally, I think Tyronn Lue is maybe an average coach, I think he gets a lot of criticism that he doesn't deserve, especially with, like, those bad Cleveland teams these past 2 years, saying that he doesn't coach, when in reality, he just... Two things. First, it's a smart hire for the Lakers because he knows how to build a team and how to kind of play with LeBron James. Talking about the past 2 years, talking about, like, how he signed different dudes for spacing and how he didn't really play Tristan Thompson as much and instead played Kevin Love at the center position. And he knows that, like, getting LeBron with a bunch of shooters, that's proven to work. And even though they haven't had success in the finals, I think a significant part of that finals run these past 2 years was the fact that he kind of just used LeBron well in a position that would favor him. So I think that, for one reason, he understands kind of how to play with LeBron James. And two, it's just, I think it's proven that LeBron really, like, respects Tyronn Lue.
Yeah. The reason I sort of laughed before for a second there is that you said, like, okay, like, he knows how to sort of run a team with LeBron. And I think more than anything, it's just, like, he lets LeBron do LeBron. You know, Tyronn Lue's going to go out, and he's just going to put out four other guys. He's going to spread out the minutes, but he's just going to have LeBron say when he wants to be on the court, when he doesn't. He's just going to tell LeBron, do your thing when we get to the playoffs. And I think that...
I wouldn't go as far as to say, like...
I don't think that Tyronn Lue's a bad coach or anything. Like, I don't think that he deserves to, like, he doesn't coach, he doesn't call plays or anything. Because I think it's more just, like, he had LeBron on the team, and LeBron was going to call the shots. But I think that is also sort of a system that has worked. It won them a championship, so, like, you go back to that.
I don't think he's just, like, letting LeBron be the head coach, and he's just there to make the front office feel good.
No.
I think, like, he actually does a job.
I just mean that there's Tyronn Lue and LeBron have already found some sort of balance that I don't think Luke Walton and LeBron ever found of, like, you're going to let LeBron be LeBron, and you're sort of there for, like... I don't know.
I think it's different than that. It's not even letting LeBron do his thing, because I think a lot of coaches will understand that LeBron is going to do his thing whether you like it or not.
Of course.
Except if you're David Blatt. But anyways, I think that, like, there's a certain level of respect that LeBron just already has for Tyronn Lue. And if Tyronn Lue says, okay, we're going to do this, LeBron James is probably going to be like, okay, I've trusted you in the past. We're doing it.
Yeah. I agree with that. I don't know. We never really talked about Luke Walton being fired because we focused more on Magic Johnson, and that already also sort of hadn't 100% happened when we released that episode. But I don't know. I feel like Luke Walton may be just a little bit of a scapegoat in the situation because it's like...
I think he's a pretty good coach.
I think so as well. That's why I think a little bit it's more about the relationship with LeBron that Tyronn Lue has more than Luke Walton being a bad coach. But I think also, like, the Lakers... as a team, as a franchise, sort of realize, like, if you're going into a season with a similar roster, a similar kind of thing as you had the season before, you have to admit that something was wrong if you didn't make the playoffs. And so rather than saying it's our players, it's on LeBron, it's on Rob Pelinka, you just, Magic Johnson leaves and you fire Luke Walton. And so then everybody's like, okay, so that's what it was. And, it, like, plus LeBron's injury.
Well,
so you're kind of putting it on Luke Walton a little bit.
But then who do you put on if you're saying that that's a scapegoat?
I'm saying they're using Luke Walton as a scapegoat a little bit.
But
I'm like,
is a scapegoat still a scapegoat if it is his fault? No.
Not really. But
so I'm saying, like,
is,
like,
it Luke Walton's fault? Like,
well, you're clearly saying it wasn't.
I don't even mean it wasn't entirely Luke Walton's fault, because, like, it definitely was partially his fault. But I also think this is just, like, outside of LeBron James, this is just not a very good team. Like...
I guess, but they had, like, two more wins than last year.
Exactly. That's what I mean. It's like, without LeBron, this is a worse team than it was before.
They had the same head coach last year.
Yeah.
But they had the same head coach when they won the same amount of games minus LeBron James.
Yeah.
So, like, he's proven that, like, he can make an okay team okay. Now he has,
so then,
like,
but then if
a
that's
more
true,
than okay
but if
team.
That is true, then he is the scapegoat. Because then he's then he's a good coach, and then you're putting the blame on him for something that's not his
fault. Okay.
I'm just saying more than anything, like, I think they fired Luke Walton more so because they needed someone to blame than, like, Luke Walton's a bad coach.
Okay.
And I also think, like, about Tyronn Lue, I'm not sure that they hired Tyronn Lue so much that he's, like, some great coach and he's one of the best coaches in the league, other than just, like, who else are you going to hire? Like, I'm not sure they have really had any other options.
I don't know. There are options out there.
Yeah.
I would have loved to see
if... Could you find someone? Yeah, but...
I would love to see if, like, David Fizdale was on this team. Like, I love him in New York.
Okay, yeah. we're biased because he's player's coach. Like, we're high on him.
I think he's a cool dude. I think LeBron really respects him, too. I feel like that would be sort of the perfect combination of Tyronn Lue, boys with LeBron James, and also, like, actually good head coach.
All right.
That's David Fizdale. Okay. All right. So we're going to move on to the Eastern Conference side of the playoff bracket, talking about Bucks versus Celtics and Raptors versus 76ers. Not really, like, predicting who's going to win or whatever, but just...
That was the last episode.
Yeah.
Go check it out if you missed it.
Yeah. But just talking about what have you noticed that's sort of, like, a theme between these two teams that could actually, like, change the series?
So, first of all...
The Bucks versus Celtics.
Yeah. First of all, for me, in Bucks versus Celtics... Whatever the Celtics were doing in Game 1 on Giannis worked very, very well. They won that game while basically holding Giannis to just not good efficiency and not that many points. I don't remember exactly what it was.
I was very surprised. That was the first
thing
time
that stood out to me.
That was the first time I've seen Giannis vulnerable in the past year and a half.
I would just say it was the best job I've seen a team do at slowing him down.
Ever.
This season.
Yeah.
Not ever, because, like, at one point, Giannis was, like, kind of booty. But, like, like, no disrespect to him, but, like,
yeah.
He's just taken
okay.
such big strides
yes.
over the past, like,
okay.
3 years.
We understand.
But, so I just think that whatever they were doing was working fantastic. And I said that.
For those that didn't watch the game, pretty much what I noticed was that they had Al Horford, like you talked about earlier in the episode, that they're going to have Al Horford guard Giannis one-on-one, but everyone else on the court is looking at Giannis 100%
yeah.
of the time. They know where he is, and if he takes, like, even half a step to go make a move, you have two help defenders,
mm-hmm.
not even just meeting him at the rim, but coming up to, like, the free throw line
yeah,
area.
They were trapping him, because the thing about Giannis is as soon as Giannis sets foot inside the paint, it's game over.
Yeah.
Either you're fouling him or... It's a bucket.
If he's
and we'll get to that when we talk about the 22 free throw thing that Kyrie was talking about that. But I also, like, so I think the Celtics did the best job that I've seen any team do, which was that they just swarmed Giannis so that he couldn't get inside
the paint.
The paint.
Yeah.
Exactly. So because Giannis is so big and so long that as soon as if you let him take one dribble from the three-point line, it's game over. But if you can stop him and swarm him and don't let him get past your first line of defense and just stop him on the perimeter – from getting inside, then it's gonna make the game a lot easier.
And honestly, people are talking about him, like, with not even with the MVP, but just like, oh, he's a top two, top three, maybe even the best player in the league.
Mm-hmm.
He can't be the best player in the league in my eyes if you take away that one aspect of his game, he's toast.
Yes, but
and the Celtics totally did that.
You also have to realize that that was sort of a perfect game for the Celtics to do that because while they were swarming in a normal game, why the Bucks have been so successful this season is that in a normal game, Giannis can take one dribble. If all three, four guys run at him, then you've got a 50-40-90 club shooter and Malcolm Brogdon staying in the corner.
Okay,
but game one, guess who was missing? Malcolm Brogdon. So
Malcolm Brogdon didn't play.
That's what I'm saying. He was out.
Okay.
He was out in game one. So that's part of the reason that it worked
so well.
They
meant like missing three.
They got a little bit lucky in that Malcolm Brogdon was out. They didn't
you're saying they got clapped by 30 because Malcolm Brogdon wasn't there to shoot threes?
No, I'm not saying that's exactly why, but I'm saying in normal circumstances.
Okay.
Well, that defensive strategy works perfectly on Giannis.
If the Bucks shoot above average in that game, they're not winning that game. They're not. Because the Celtics did such a good job. They would swarm Giannis, and then they have long athletic defenders to where they can get back in time.
Then tell me if they don't shoot above average that game.
They don't win.
They don't. Then tell me how they won, like... How they have the best record in the league. Tell me how they're 61
team. Because the Celtics are really good at defense with Brad Stevens
coaching
them.
Tell me how they're up 2-1 in the series if shooting an above average in that game, they wouldn't win.
The Celtics just haven't played well the past game. They want the Celtics lost by 30 in game 3.
I'm telling you, bro. If you have to pick your poison with this Bucks team. It takes a team to stop Giannis. So if you guard Giannis and you do that thing where you swarm him on the perimeter and they have an above average shooting night where their guys are shooting lights out, it's game over. Either they're going to light you up from the 3-point line or Giannis is going to light you up inside. In most nights, it's going to be pick your poison. Now they just had a perfect game where they had a couple shooters who were out. They had a couple shooters who were having off nights, and Giannis could get nothing going because that was their entire defensive strategy. And that's how the Bucks lose by 30. But that's a lot of things that have to go wrong for this Bucks team to lose one game out of three. That's why the Bucks are going to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Are going to the finals.
Sorry, they're winning the finals. That's why they're going to win the Eastern Conference Finals, and they're going to the finals.
Okay, I don't know about that one.
I've been saying it, bro.
I had them win the series, and I still do, but I don't have them going to the finals. Which honestly, that seems like a pretty good transition to the other half, who they're going to be playing in the Eastern Conference Finals. Is it going to be the Raptors or is it going to be the 76ers? We're not here to answer that. We're here to talk about the first three games of the series. I'm tight, man. Okay, I have the Raptors in the finals, and just they're like.
Well, I told you the Bucks were going to be in the finals.
Okay,
I don't want to speak so. Like, I don't want to get cocky now.
They're pulling a Toronto Raptors for the past 4 years. I don't know how I didn't see this coming.
But that's not on Kawhi. I'm telling you, it's not on Kawhi. We all knew Kawhi was going to be great.
It's not.
But Kyle Lowry has scored through three games.
He's the worst contract in the league.
Kyle Lowry has scored a total through three games in this playoff series. Kyle Lowry has scored 36 points. Not 36 points in one game. Not 36 points per game. 36 points total. That is 12 points per game across three games. This is your all-star? This is the guy you're paying $35 million a year? Worst. This is your starting point guard? Bench that man.
Worst contract
in the league. Bench that man. Okay. Start Jeremy Lin, bro. Start Jeremy Lin.
Jeremy Lin got a DNP in game two when they lost.
I can't believe it. How are you going to go out there and play Kyle Lowry, averaging 12 points a game, chucking up 20 shots, and Jeremy Lin's getting a DNP? Let me know, bro.
Okay, I want to focus on this game too.
Okay, Kyle Lowry's good on defense though. All right, I'm exaggerating a little bit.
No,
but
okay, I want to talk about this game too, man. I'm so mad. Like, oh my god, this game two. For reference, the 76ers won in Toronto 94-89.
Let's go.
Which just doesn't happen anymore. Teams score over 100 points in every single game. This is what happened in this game. And you think that the Raptors did a good job against the 76ers. Tobias Harris scored 9 points on 3 of 11 shooting. Joel Embiid scored 12 points on 2 of 7 shooting in 32 minutes.
Keep in mind, this is a 76ers win. That's the context.
Yes. Ben Simmons scored 6 points in the entire game while playing 44 minutes. He scored 6 points.
How are you gonna lose the game when those 76ers have that kind of night?
And J.J. Redick, their other starter besides Jimmy Butler, only scored 11 points.
Wow, what was Jimmy's game like?
And he shot for 2 for 8 from 3.
What was Jimmy's game like?
He scored 30. Like, right. What?
Yeah, I mean, you got to capitalize on that.
Yeah, you got...
That team's got so many people.
Four of their five really good starters have horrible games from the field and just do not play well. You cannot afford to lose that game, Toronto.
Man, I'm telling you.
I don't care if Jimmy Butler scored, like, 30 points. The team only scored 94 points when they have one of the best offenses in the league.
This is why Kawhi is gone, bro.
Really?
This is why Kawhi is gone. It's literally, it's just him. And Spicy P. But they need him. Spicy P has scored a total of 70 points this series. Kawhi scored a total of 113.
Here.
My man.
I hate to cut you off, but this series, Kawhi Leonard has scored 113 points on 63% shooting through game three. The rest of the Toronto Raptors roster...
Bro, it's going to be 20%.
Has scored 179 points, just like 66 points more on 35% shooting.
Bruh, that's... You're not going to win like that. Now, shout out to Pascal Siakam. He's the only other Raptors player who's been half decent. And we thought Marc Gasol... I wasn't expecting Marc Gasol to come in here and be like elite post scorer. But he's former Defensive Player of the Year. I was like, all right, at least they just traded for him to lock up Joel Embiid. My guy Joel Embiid scored 33 points and had like 6 blocks in a game or whatever.
I mean, he did have that 12-point game, which they lost.
But, I mean, it doesn't
matter. It doesn't matter
if Joel Embiid only scores 12 points if you lose that game, bro.
I'm going back to this game, too. I don't care.
This is why Kawhi's gone. Kawhi's going to the Clippers. He's going to be playing with
Landry Shamet, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Montrezl Harrell, Lou Will. And honestly, that's going to be an exciting team, yeah, bro. But it's already done. It's already done.
Pascal Siakam is good. Kawhi Leonard's looking around. In this game where they hold the 76ers to 94 points, you have Kawhi Leonard dropping 35 points, shooting above 50% from the field with 7 rebounds and 6 assists. You have Pascal Siakam playing really well, scoring 21 points. Give it that, like, he didn't shoot that efficiently from the field, but it's fine. Kyle Lowry, 20 points per game, or 20 points in this game. Those are your three best players having three good games, above average games. The rest of the roster, let's say, the rest of the roster scored 13 points combined.
Yeah, the series is over.
They scored five bench points.
76ers are winning game four because Pascal Siakam is doubtful.
They scored five bench points in an NBA game.
So the series is over.
In a playoff game.
Kawhi's gone. Kawhi's top three player in the NBA.
I still have faith in the Raptors. We're like not here to make predictions, but like I could see them coming back. If they win this upcoming game, I have them winning.
Kawhi, you think Kawhi's top three player in the NBA?
No.
LeBron, KD, Kawhi.
No.
Who's going over him? Not Curry. Don't even try to tell me Curry.
We'll get to that.
Don't even try.
We'll get to that. Harden? I don't know. Giannis?
Okay. It's an argument. Okay, but I might go with Kawhi.
Okay. Hopefully, Raptors maybe to the finals if they can get out of the series. Okay.
All right. Let's talk about Curry, though.
Okay. Let's talk about Wardell, Stephen Curry, and the Warriors. Talking about the Western Conference, talking about the two series. First, Houston versus Golden State, then Blazers Nuggets.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's talk about this Warriors series real quick. Okay, I want to cover a few things. I want to cover Curry, because keep in mind we watched last night Stephen Curry miss a wide open dunk at the end of the game that maybe could have brought them back. So that's what's in our stomachs right now.
I mean, they were down five. I'm not sure that was going to really win them the game. But when you add up that missed dunk and he missed a layup like a minute before, like he's just all over the place, man.
I want to talk about.
And he also can't even stay on the court because he's in foul trouble every single game.
He's my favorite player in the league.
I don't know what he's on. He cannot stay in the game.
He can't.
It's like, okay.
It's bad.
Here's my theory. I think. I said this. I was sort of theorizing like. Back like last year too, but this sort of like really drove it home, and now people actually listen to this. Now people aren't gonna be like, you're crazy. But I really think that the Warriors signing Kevin Durant, as great as that was, and is that definitely made them a better team, but it really hurt Steph Curry's confidence and swagger on the court, bro. I said it in the first half. I was just sitting there with my dad, and Steph Curry caught the ball in the corner, wide open. Players closing out on him. He stands there, looks at the basket, decide if he's going to shoot or not. Stand there for like a second. Then he pump fakes. And I was like, okay, so he's going to pump fake. He's going to drive around. No, he pump fakes, brings the ball back down, then shoots it. A full like 3 seconds after you caught the ball in the corner.
That sounds like
Steph Curry from 2 years ago, unanimous MVP Steph Curry, just off two finals in a row or whatever. He's shooting that no hesitation.
That's what I was like me in sixth grade, just having no confidence. Just like, that's bad.
And honestly, it looks like he's a sixth grader out there.
I disagree.
Like, no confidence, but so good.
Yeah, I disagree in the fact that I don't think he's lost his swagger. Because I think that whenever he or KD or Clay does something awesome, you see him just like shimming around. You see him just doing all this stuff. So I don't think he's lost the Steph Curry confidence that makes some people hate him. And that makes me love him. But I do think just the
you can't tell me there's not something off.
Though. I feel like the word is hunger. I feel like the word is hunger to kind of just have big games. In that he thinks that in the back of his mind he's like, okay, we're down by two. I have Kevin Durant on my roster. Probably gonna go to him.
Yeah.
When like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, you have Curry. Like even though whatever he didn't have a good finals performance 1 year, he's like. He's like, give me this. I'm going to go to work because I'm the second best player in the league. And then I'm just going to drill a three in your face and you can't do anything about it.
And I said it at the beginning of the season that I'm upset that this isn't looked at as Kevin Durant's team because Kevin Durant is the best player on the team. Kevin Durant is the second best player in the league. And it should be looked at as Kevin Durant's team, even though it never will be. But that's a different story. That's what he's going to next this offseason. Shout out. But
yeah, also just. Yeah, it seems like he's not hungry for the moment anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Really makes me a little sad.
But it just, like, I think that when Kevin Durant first came, Steph Curry was being very passive on purpose, trying to give Kevin Durant the ball, trying to welcome him into the franchise. But since then, he's never really picked it back up and gotten it back to his MVP form.
Yeah, I just want to leave...
As great as he's looked at certain moments.
I want to leave, like, this sort of idea of Steph Curry not being hungry for big moments anymore.
Yeah.
Stephen Curry in the fourth quarter in overtime of last night's game, Game 3 of the semifinals. 0 for 6 from the field, 0 points, 0 rebounds, 0 assists, 0 steals, 0 blocks, 1 turnover, 5 fouls.
Just in fourth quarter in overtime, 5 fouls. That's a problem. You're telling me that you're relying on this man to carry your team. I mean, you're relying on Kevin Durant. But this is your former unanimous MVP right here. And he's doing this. Come on, Steph.
Yeah.
You got to step it up.
I'm a little sad. Anyways.
Honestly, here's one last thing. Yeah. It looks like Steph Curry is honestly just like stepped back and is turning into like an average second option out of nowhere. Like, not totally, but, like, just in that fourth quarter alone. He just, like, yeah. He looks like he's gone. If you had never watched Steph Curry or didn't know anything about him from past years, and were just watching him in this playoffs, you'd be, like, you wouldn't think of him as, like, an MVP. It would be Kevin Durant's team, Kevin Durant's the star, and Steph Curry's, like, that second option. It doesn't seem like they're kind of, like...
Which is terrible.
Equals or, like, partners in crime. It seems like Steph Curry's been playing a step below... what we expect from him.
Yeah.
Just this playoffs.
The other thing I want to talk about with this Warriors-Rockets series is the whole fouling situation.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically in Game 1, you're talking about... There was a lot of controversy about James Harden shooting a jump shot, his step-back three, and Klay Thompson specifically, three times I counted, not giving him room to land. The NBA has made significant strides in this, trying to protect the shooter from... coming down on someone's foot and rolling his ankle, as we saw in 2015 with Kawhi Leonard,
and 2016, Zaza, yeah.
And Zaza Pachulia. And so this has become a rule. This is arguably how James Harden gets some of his foul calls, but it's a legitimate rule because you don't want players taking jump shots and coming down on someone's foot. And this sparked a lot of controversy. And I personally, I lie toward favor of the Rockets with this argument.
I do too.
But I'm not all the way. Because on that last shot, talking about Game 1, James Harden took a step back, and he shot, and the prior shots throughout that game, he wouldn't really kick out his legs. He would kick out his legs a little bit in order to get energy on a shot, and that's normal. That's allowed. That's legal. And Klay Thompson would come down on his foot, and he would fall down, and it should have been called a foul, but it wasn't. I have two problems with the final possession of this game. First, he shouldn't have been looking for that call because it wasn't being called all game. As a hooper, you got to know that. It's a normal thing. You play with the refs even if they're not right. Yeah. You have to kind of adapt to them, and you can't – this is kind of just Rockets basketball coming to bite them in the ass. Like,
you live by three, die by the three. Live by the ref. Step back, ref, foul call, you're going to die by it.
Yeah. Second thing, James Harden kicked out his legs all the way. He was clearly looking for a foul. And if you see...
Just on the last one?
Yeah, just on the last one. If you see where he takes off and where his legs reach when Draymond makes contact with him, it's kind of laughable they're looking for a foul call. Yeah.
I think that it's... that in that situation, I'd have to like look at the clip like slow motion, but it's probably more important in that situation, even more so than where he's kicking out, of where Draymond steps. Because if Draymond steps into where he took off from, then it's a foul. Yeah.
He did.
Then it's not a foul call. But
yeah, and just.
But the Klay Thompson one's definitely clear.
Yeah.
There was three on Klay Thompson, like one or two on Draymond.
Yeah,
and they were questionable.
That's where I lie. I think like throughout the game, it was a foul. That last possession, come on, James Harden, it wasn't. And even if it was, you can't rely on that in the final seconds.
And I think that there's a little bit of a thing here of like, that's James Harden style of play. That's his bread and butter. Like, of course he's going to go to that. But what you said about like. And part of the thing is, like, also that's the way that's been called all season. That's what he's relied on for the last, like, 3 years. So it's a little bit much to be like, okay, now you have to, in the heat of the moment, we need to get a shot off. If they can defend you like that, you're at a serious disadvantage. Even though they called it consistently the entire game, and you probably shouldn't be looking for that because, like, you know they're not going to call it.
As a leader, you still have to be accountable for that.
Yeah.
As a top 4 or 5 player in the league, you have to be able to do that.
And the truth is, the NBA wrote a report where they went back in and basically said that the refs got like all those calls wrong and that Steph Curry fouled twice in the last like 5 minutes or something.
Classic Steph Curry.
So he should have fouled out two different times because he had five fouls like the entire fourth quarter. Instead, Steph Curry hit the game winner. So I do think the Rockets should be up 2-1 right now instead of down 2-1.
Yeah.
But at the same time, because
that game was theirs to win.
Because if the game was called the way the game was supposed to be called, those three would have been fouls. Now, could then the Warriors have played differently and been looking for those same calls? Yes, you never really know. And then the whole thing of the game is going to change. You can't just say, now they would have won because you called those. But
yeah, nothing happens in a vacuum.
James Harden said, we just want a fair chance to win this game, and we weren't given that in this game. And I do kind of agree with that. That wasn't not calling those doesn't really give them a fair chance because the rules literally say this is how it said, and the NBA literally went in and corrected that.
Okay, one last thing that's really bugging me with this series: throughout the entire series, all across the NBA, mm-hmm. if someone gets a foul call, it can be minor. Now everyone's like, looks at the ref like they have three head. Like they're like, oh my god, I can't believe you just called that.
I'm a little bit tired. It's after every game. It's like the refs are trash.
No, not even after every game. It's after every foul call. It can be a reach.
No, but I just mean like fans on Twitter and stuff. Like it's like
no, I'm talking about the players.
It's like it feels like every NBA game now. It's like you just hear in the background, ref, you suck. Ref,
yeah,
you're like facts. It's like just shut up. Like no one wants to hear that.
Yeah, that's facts.
And just being a sore loser. One more series to go.
Blazers Nuggets.
Now, I regret a little bit, but I stayed up till 2 watching the quadruple overtime game.
Do you regret that?
I do a little bit. It was just...
Really? I wish I stayed up.
It was like, I put it on, I got a notification on my phone, like, close game alert, like, as I'm brushing my teeth, I'm about to go to sleep. It was like 12 o'clock, and there's like 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. So I go down, I'm like, okay, this game's gonna be over at like 12:30. And like then I'll go to sleep and we're gonna be chilling. But it went to overtime. And then it was like, oh shoot, this is about to go to double overtime. I was like, I can't go to sleep now. It's about to be a double overtime. And so I stay up and I watch double overtime. And then it's going to triple overtime. I'm like, well, I definitely can't go to sleep now. And then it goes to quadruple. I'm like, oh my god.
Were you like almost mad?
Someone just hit a shot, so we're not going to sleep. And so that's all the tweets that were going viral. And so I was just like, I was like half asleep on the couch. I was like not even really paying attention anymore, but I had to stay up because you never know.
What time was it?
It was 2. It was like 2:30 by the time it ended or something like that. And it was just like,
that's tough.
With every overtime, it was like the stakes were higher and higher. And so it was like you had to stay up more and more, even though you really didn't want to. So I kind of regret it. Because in the end, it was like Rodney Hood that went off, and
he was the only one that wasn't tired.
Because I missed the first Damian Lillard game winner because that one was at like 1 or 1:30.
I was up,
and so I missed that, and so I was like, I can't miss a quadruple overtime Damian Lillard game winner. But Dame was kind of trash that whole overtime in fourth quarter. Damian Lillard was like, he had some thing where he like airballed a layup like off a steal. CJ was the one that stepped up. CJ McCollum was huge.
He's been different in these playoffs.
And it was crazy. You can go watch, and that basically, like, it was very interesting because I kind of forget everything that happened, but, like, every play, it felt like every play from, like, the last, like, 30 minutes of that, like, of game time of that game was, like, a clutch play because it was, like, 5 minutes of overtime, and it was like that could be the decide. It felt every 5 minutes was crunch time.
Yeah.
Even though like it went on for a lot longer than that, just because like you were playing to tie it back up or whatever. Yeah. So it was interesting. It was a lot of fun to watch. And basically,
I was
watching Jokic, bro. That man was winded. That man. Keep in mind, an NBA game is 48 minutes. He played like 60-65 minutes that game.
He played 65 minutes.
He played a full hour.
The most played in a playoff game since 1953.
I mean, it was crazy. That man, I swear, he always looks like the most unathletic player in the league when he's out there. That night, he was like, he could barely move up and down the court. The whole game slowed down so much, I feel like.
I saw a meme, and it was like Jokic after playing the full 65 minutes, and it was like the tall, skinny white dude from Spire who plays with LaMelo Ball.
It was like, it was... It was a fun game, though. It was exciting. And when it finally ended, it was like, thank God. But but Rodney Hood came up big, and it was sort of like, well, why didn't you think of that earlier? Like, it was like everybody was so tired, and all of a sudden Rodney Hood played like 25 minutes that game, and he comes out of the court and hits the game winner. And
you're like, in that situation.
Couldn't you have thought of that in the first overtime? It was crazy. But
I've been in moments where like there's one dude with fresh legs, and it's just like he's the most athletic dude you've ever seen, because everyone else is just moving so slowly. He's just like, he's running in transition too, because no one wants to get back. Personally, when I woke up the next morning, I'm like, oh my God, what just happened? Then also, my mind went to, are the Nuggets morally defeated?
You gotta be a little bit. Because, and also, it got to the point by the end of it, if it was like, it lasted so long that it was like less than 2 days at that point until their next game. it went like a full 2 hours longer than it was supposed to. So it was less than 2 hours. It got to like 43 hours until their next game. And so it was eating into like, then you think about, okay, so that game ended at 2. Now, that's Eastern time, so it's earlier, wherever.
Yeah, but now, the Blazers are set to go up 3-1 if they can win at home.
Yeah.
Also, first of all, do you think that the crowd factored into this? Because, like, playing at home seems so much more important when you're going into single, double, triple, and fourth overtimes when you're playing at home.
Yeah.
So I feel like, that kind of contributes to the Nuggets maybe feeling morally defeated.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that. Yeah. You know, like if you're there with your home crowd, there's a little bit of like, we gotta do it for them, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas like, I think it's when you're going to fourth overtime, you just played 65 minutes. If you're Jokic and you're surrounded by Trailblazers fans like shouting at you, like you're gonna be a little bit more like, okay, just more willing to give up, you know?
Yeah. So also, my mind went immediately to, if I'm the Nuggets, I'm feeling a little bit how the Cavs and LeBron felt after game one of the finals where JR forgot the score. You see how, seriously, going back to that game in the finals, you see JR Smith forgot the score.
Mm-hmm.
The Cavs, like, LeBron had one of his weakest months of his career. He wasn't really the best leader. Just everyone was kind of destroyed mentally because this was going to be their one chance. And it kind of just, the overtime sucked. They lost by like 15 in overtime. That never happens. And it just carried over for the rest of the series, saying, that was our game to win. We can't do it anymore. I totally feel like that could definitely happen with the Nuggets.
Especially just because they're a young, inexperienced group.
Yeah.
You know, like that Lakers, or that Cleveland team is also a lot older and more experienced. They'd already won a championship. This is a team that didn't even make the playoffs last year.
I mean, no, then again, just because, like, that Cleveland team had been playing together for, like, 40 games.
That's also true. Yeah. But I'm excited for the rest of the series.
Yeah, me too. I'm excited to see Damian Lillard in the Western Conference Finals beating Steph Curry's ass. Maybe.
Are you going to stick with it? Are you going to stick with it?
Them going to the finals?
No, beating Steph Curry. You can't switch up anymore.
I can't switch up.
You can't trust Damian Lillard, then be like, I shouldn't trust Damian Lillard anymore.
I don't know. I already did that. But I don't know. Man. That never happened. We're forgetting about that. No, I don't know what to do if my two favorite players go up against each other, Damian Lillard versus Stephen Curry. Who do I go for?
I feel like you gotta go with Dame just because he's the underdog.
He's the underdog? Yeah, maybe. And also just because, like, Blazers in six. Forever. In any series ever.
You wrote that pre-podcast.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Space Floor NBA Podcast. We hope you enjoyed. Follow us on Instagram at Space the Floor Podcast and on Twitter at Space the Floor. If you're listening on YouTube, subscribe and leave a like. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for watching. My name is Connor Geelan.
And I'm Connor Flattery.
And see you next time.
Peace.